Blog Talk Radio.
Moving into our weekly conversation, as we affectionately call it, with Black Man Talk. I'm the host, Mark Elliott, soon to be joined by Mr. DeMaurice and Mr. Charles, and it's about conversations. Conversations, for the most part, that enriches our minds, fortifies and strengthens where we live our lives. And reality, that's what a conversation should do, to spark some interest, some thinking, move the imagination a little bit. And I'm happy that we get together once a week and do plenty of that. We've been doing this for quite some time. And I always wanted to have this be something where we're not blaming. And I think some people may listen to us sometimes and think that we're kind of pointing their fingers. No, we're expressing our feelings, our thoughts, and what we perceive to be accurate. And if that steps on your toe, then I don't know what to tell you. But the goal has never been here to blame or point fingers. Basically, as I state, just to have conversations to where we basically enrich ourselves and maybe possibly others. Again, that's what a conversation should be about. Good morning, Mr. DeMaurice. How you feeling, my brother?
Hey, man. I'm feeling good. I'm among the living. I'm on this side of the turf. So, hey, man, I can't complain. Well, I shouldn't.
There it is, man. There it is. You know, this episode, as I spoke about the last episode, we're going to speak about is your happiness on layaway? And as I was kind of, you know, thinking about this and moving towards this episode, I started to realize we don't even use that word. If you think about it, man, I don't know if we use the word happiness much anymore. It's one of those things that we kind of take for granted, but do we really talk about it, use it? Like if someone just like now asks, you know, how you feeling? Somebody, you know, you say what you say, but how many times have you said that to someone, let's say in the last month or so, and they came back and said, I'm happy. You know, I'm good, I'm this, I'm that, but we don't even associate a lot of times with the word happy. The word happy itself, and to me, happiness has gotten caught up in a lot of distractions. And in a way, it should be something that's afforded to us, or it is not a way, it is something that's afforded to us every day, but it seems like it has a short life, a short-term life. When it pops in, it pops out, you know, we were happy for a moment, you know, something happens, and, we pop some champagne or whatever, but it doesn't seem to basically walk with us long term. And that's part of the reason why I decided to do this, because I realized that, you know, happiness is almost like an afterthought. It's like we don't expect it anymore. So with that being said, I wanted to ask you, Mr. Charles, good morning, brother. You can tell us how you feel as well. But did ever wonder why happiness doesn't seem to last a long time, Mr. Charles? It seems like it's short-lived.
Good morning. I think happiness is short-lived because in today's society, we're accustomed to just kind of getting along, right? You just kind of accept things. You're like, okay, what is true happiness? What is real happiness? And some people think that they don't really deserve it. So it's so hard. So it's almost like when you say happiness, are you looking for perfection? Are looking for things just to be always all right all the time? Or what is that based on? And some people say, hey, I don't know if I'm ever going to get that. So do I wish this situation was better? Yeah, I do. Or my life was better, whatever it is. But it's not. So guess what? I'm just going to defer and just accept this for what it is, hoping that it improves. So that's why you hear those constant, some of you ask people, are they happy? Oh, yeah, I'm happy. What's that proverbial phrase? It's all good. I lost my house. I lost my girl. I lost my wife. I lost everything. My house burned down. But you know what, player? It's all good. How the hell is it all good? Anyway, that's something else.
I remember this cat. I used to was a homeless cat. And I've never been one to give people money just if they're out in the street. I'll buy you something to eat, treat you to something that way, but you know, I wouldn't give money for other reasons. But this gentleman I came across, man, and from the moment I saw him, he had this shine of happiness about him. Here he is sitting in a chair, probably everything he owns nearby him, and him and I, we striked up a conversation immediately. Yeah, we just started talking, and I felt the happiness vibe, which led me to go for my wallet. Because to me, you know, I could look at him and think, okay, he's down and out. He ain't grunting about it. He's up. He's smiling. He's happy. He's showing joy. And I'm like, that's what it's about. And I understand what you're saying, Mr. Charles, which is true, because a lot of us think if we don't reach a certain plateau, we don't get this, we don't have that. It's almost, again, like laying away your happiness until you get there. You should be happy every day. As Mr. DeRee said earlier, you're up. You're among the living. You know, if you got breath and you wake up and your eyes are open, that's enough for me to be happy all day. But again, to you, Mr. DeMaurice, you know, happiness tends to kind of be short-lived. Your version, why, sir?
Yeah, happiness can be elusive, you know, if you're really kind of looking for outside things to make you happy. It's like, you know, you got oil on your hands and you're trying to, you know, hold something that's really slippery. But I always looked at being happy and being, you know, joyous as a choice, that you wake up and say, you know what, no matter what, this is the approach I'm going to take. No matter what happens, no matter all the negativity, I'm not going to let it spoil my day. I'm not going to let it spoil my mood. You have to actually make a conscious choice to say, I'm going to be happy no matter what. No matter what the situation, no matter what's before me or all the stuff that's around me, I'm going to choose to be grateful and thankful and blessed. And so you make that choice, and you have to make a conscious choice, because if you just rely on outside sources to kind of make you happy, never going to happen. Never going to happen. It's going to be somebody, something, a situation that's going to just going to kind of veer you off to being depressed or being sad or not being grateful or not being thankful and not thinking about your blessing. So you have to actually, when you wake up, say, I'm going to make a conscious choice no matter what, to be happy and to stay this way and to give whatever I can give this day to somebody else to be the best that I can be and bringing out the best in them. And that's the way I kind of look at life, because there are a million things you can be sad about. There are a million things that you can let take you down. But if you don't make that conscious choice, you'll be sitting there and half the day or most of the day's gone by and you'll be sitting there miserable. And I just refuse to be that way.
Ladies and gentlemen, see why I love these two gentlemen, these two cats, because you give them something. Look what they give back to you. And that's it. You give them something, and what they give back. Even in life, sometimes we're afraid to give others because we want to receive. But no, give it and watch what comes back. And that's what we do here. I love you to death, man.
Mark,
no. Yes, sir.
Mark, can I say something real quick, if you don't mind on that?
Absolutely, bro. Mm-hmm.
I think DeMaurice is spot on in that. And the reason why I wanted to jump in is because I think about that too. You have a choice. Like you said, you wake up, you know, your bills could be, like for instance, your car could be down. You really need your car. You need to move and function. The way that you live your life normally can be totally blown up and blown apart. But then again, as he said, the fact that you can open your eyes and your situation is not as severe as others, you know, you have money, you have some other things, you have the necessities, you can eat, whatever. When you wake up in the morning, the positivity that you can bring to your life daily by having a conscious effort to go, I'm going to do this today. I'm going to do this today. Despite this, yeah, it's pissing me off. I wish I want to get this fixed, but maybe I can't. But if I have this positive attitude and help other people, it will change the way that you go about your business and how you have success in your life, I promise you. Because the attitude that you have from the beginning and how you go about the business is going to benefit you. Sooner or later, something's going to open up. And like I told you, I'm not that damn lucky. And whatever you believe in, too, particularly in a higher power, is going to happen for you. You just have to have a positive attitude. Doesn't mean you can have some times where you're down a little bit, but you got to stay positive because, again, you could be on a respirator. So many other things. You cannot have food. You cannot have a lot of, not have shelter. But the fact that you had the blessings in front of you, you got to be thankful for them and move forward.
There it is. There it is, man. It's hard to come behind that, and other than to think that realistically, this has been research that's done over and over and over again, and it sounds simple and it may sound overstated, but happiness also comes from helping others. As you two basically stated, you know, you wake up, you do positive things or something else. And I don't think we forgot about that. I'm sure throughout life at some point that was expressed to us. But doing things for others, benefiting others, leads to, it may not be instant. It may not come in that second. Like, and that's not the reason why you should do it. But in overall terms, in overall way of life, it's just way life is presented. You help others, it brings back a feeling of good, brings back a feeling of happiness. And, you know, I look at sometimes where, you know, we're all doing different things to benefit ourselves or going through different things, or the case may be, could be trying to work on a particular project. And it seems like sometimes we put the happiness aside until it's completed, until it's done, and we kind of wait for that particular time. But I want to jump from that and go to this, because I really believe, too, being present is a big part of being happiness, or part of happiness. And you say, okay, being present, what are you talking about? Being present, being in the moment where you are. And I know for a fact in my heart that a lot of times when you allow your past basically to drag on you, and you go back and you revisit it, you overanalyze it, you do this, you spend so much time there, you are basically depleting your happiness bank. There's, how could you possibly be happy when you're not present in the moment where you are? And as the two beautiful things these two gentlemen have spoke about, when you wake up, you feel a certain way, you make that choice. How could you make a choice to be happy if you're basically running a car through your past and analyzing and doing all that? That's not being present. And at the same time, if you're not present and you spend more time worrying about tomorrow, stressing about what tomorrow's going to happen, I don't have it. How can you find, and how can you live, and how can your happiness improve? How can you even feel it? So being present is a key factor of basically allowing yourself to feel that happiness. And I know a lot of times we can have conversations with people, and they basically want to run through their past and give you all the, you know, what's this is that. And I'm not sure if they're trying to basically make you feel sad, feel sorry. But, you know, and you're standing there like, okay, all right. At one point, you know, does this sideshow stop? Because we all have trials and tribulations. And it's interesting. You know, I basically, you know, for the most part, speak what I feel. I speak what's in my heart. And I'm going to share something with you, gentlemen, share something with the show. I have a buddy of mine that I grew up with. Him and I went to high school with. And he's one of those type of persons. If you hear this, maybe it'd do him some good. But he's been one of those, always wanted to be on the negative, whatever the case may be. So the last few months or whatever, him and I haven't talked over the years that much. He's kind of went away. But years ago, I said to him, man, when you and I start to speak, I don't want to hear that anymore. I'm going to give you 5 minutes. And after that, we change the subject or we just stop talking, because I don't want to get around you, go out for a drink or something, and my whole time there, I'm listening to you vent about what's going on in your life. Take some responsibility for it. Now, this same cat has been trying to call me for the last several months, and I won't pick up the phone because I don't want to hear all that. I want to be present, bro. I don't want to hear the negative that's been going on in your life for the past several years. I'm not going to allow you or anyone else to interrupt my happiness. It's not going to happen, because I choose to be happy every single day. That's a personal decision I make when I wake up, my eyes open, I thank God for allowing me to see another day. So you can take that somewhere else. And the mode of being present, Mr. Charles, I'm coming back to you, how important is it is to be present. You know, a lot of times to me, we got to build a shelter around our mind to make sure we don't let stuff that doesn't belong kind of creep in. How important is to be present a factor of happiness for you, sir?
I think being present is very valuable for happiness. And I say that because of the factor that you mentioned earlier, a few minutes ago, the factor that your past can be, I see the past or an experience, what I call it sometimes, as a twofold type of situation. You can let your past keep you stagnant. You keep dwelling in what happened and what you could have done differently, and as you live in that past, you're going to remain stagnant. You're never going to grow, and you're also not going to be happy. Or you can use it as what I call more like a lesson or lessons as a barometer to go, do you remember that? Oh, man, I was, you know, might say to yourself, man, I was really messed up. I can't believe I had to go through all that to get to where I am right now. And go, okay, yeah, I get that. And it was mad. It hurt. It was tough. But I made it through. But here I am today. Woo! You might even sit back a couple times and think about it a little bit. But you need to progress forward and live in today. And you mentioned about other people that always stay in the past, or they always complain about their situation. I think I've got like a 10 turn count. You get like 10 times if I'm really connected to you to do that, maybe really 5. And then after a while, and the whole time I'm doing that, when I'm not exhausted, I have to always encourage them, you got to do something different. You just do. I'm sorry. I mean, I understand. But you sitting over here saying, this ain't working, they ain't doing this, the white man hold me, all the time. Damn. I mean, how many times is the white man going to hold you down? Since you was a kid, how many times have you felt like the white man or society was holding you back? At some point, you got to take a step. You got to take a step to find a damn solution to your problems or include other people or other things to move forward. Otherwise, you're going to be still sitting on the same damn rock you've been on for the last 15, 20 years.
Yeah, that statement right there used to be, you could put that on a T-shirt. The white man holding me down. I remember when I used to first hear that, I'd be like, okay, I'm trying to find where he at. I don't see him. He must be invisible because I sure don't see him. But that mindset itself holds you down. It's not them. And I say that to say, yeah, there's not things out there to kind of block you from growing, whatever the case may be. But when you realize what your ancestors had to go through to allow you to be here, and they weren't, I mean, that was being held down. And they, in spite of being held down, they fought and got things done. So you, to stand here and act like there's somebody basically got their hand around you or on your shoulders pushing you down, no, it's about you. It's about you because when one door closes, another one opens. Your response to being present, Mr. Demon Reese, how important is to basically our everyday happiness?
It's crucial to be present because if you're not present, you miss the things that are happening right now. And I often look at, I'm going to take this the social media route. One of my pet peeves is that when people are, out and about, I don't really put photos up that if I'm at a party or I'm in a different country or a different state, or I rarely take pictures, and usually I may use other people's pictures to kind of, you know, use that to kind of illustrate the point. The reason being is that I see so many events where people are just behind the camera and not really kind of taking in everything that's happening in the room. I look at this, and I appreciate the people who are taking the pictures and stuff and documenting all this. But I remember being at my father's 80th birthday, and, you know, so many people were behind cameras, on the camera phone, things of that sort. And I just wanted to take in everything that was happening, take in the feeling that I was having there. You know, I think people miss that. It's like it's organic. It, like, it just seeps right through you. And just watching his happiness and watching, you know, his heart just fill with love, man. And if you're behind the camera or you're on social media while these things, yeah, people want to be on live and all that other stuff, like, bump that, man. Enjoy the moment. And not everything is meant for everybody to see. Enjoy the moment at that particular time. And it's like that moment, no camera or recording can really kind of capture what I know I was feeling at that particular time and what he was feeling at that particular time. And then having conversations afterwards with him about the day and you know, how he was surprised and how thankful he was and, you know, him shaking his head like, man, y'all got me. I didn't think I can give you got, but y'all got me. You know, just enjoying that moment and that present. And when I'm, like, with people, I was with a buddy of mine Friday. I'm like, man, let's go out to lunch. I mean, I hadn't seen you in a while. And we, you know, we took a picture afterwards to show one of our other buddies who we used to hang, we used to all work together, you know, and say, hey, man, you got to come down there and break bread with us. But just sitting there talking and laughing, man, and before we knew it, like 2 hours, he was on a lunch break. Almost 3 hours had gone by. We were just talking, laughing, catching up, man. And you miss those moments when you're not really sitting there, you know, focused and in the conversation and in the moment and appreciating that you got this time together. And I think we kind of lose that with all the different distractions that we have. And I'm not saying all distractions are bad things, but take some time to just be there with people, be there if you have children or small children, not just watching TV and they're just running around the room, actually interacting with people. And I think we miss it. And one more thing real quick. I remember being, I was bartending one day at a house party that this family has every year. And they invite me back. I'm so grateful they invite me back. It's almost like I'm part of family. And the teenagers were in a certain part of the house, and all of them were sitting on their phones. Nobody was interacting. Nobody was interacting. All this wonderful stuff that's happening around them, all of them are just their face planted right in their phones. And there was like 10 of them downstairs, and they all just sitting on their phones. They're not interacting. They're not living in the present. Their family members are around. They're not engaging. And I know when we were younger, man, we were engaged with each other. You know, we had to be. We were our own entertainment. We didn't have no social media to kind of entertain us. We were our own entertainment. We were there, you know, whether we were fighting or we were, you know, in some kind of positive interaction. We were there. We were present. We remember those moments. I know I do. And that builds your character. That builds who you are. And I think that even fortifies us being happy human beings afterwards. And know that I had that experience. You know, I can share that experience later on. Hey, remember when we did such and such and such and such? And I get all the time, man, I forgot about that. But I'd like to be in those moments so I can remember, so I have something, a point of reference to go back to. When I see you, I get this smile on my face. It's not something bad that you did. It's something, a positive experience we had that, you know, fills my heart up with joy. And it fills my heart to say, you know what, I'm glad to see you once again. I get a chance to see you and interact with you once again.
Happiness in psychology is a state of emotional well-being of a person experience. And that goes right to what you're saying about those experiences, man, that those great experiences you experienced continues to basically add to that happiness bank that you pull from daily and consistently. And it's interesting, you know, about the social media thing. Like you said, if people are going live, you know, people to me with that, they're always trying to prove I'm living such this type of life. Why do you have to show that to everyone? Yeah, why are you trying to prove that? If you are, you are. But you show me a video of somewhere you asked, but they ain't saying nothing to me, realistically. And then the video gets off, you're miserable. You're not happy. You know, I know cats have done that. They go places and they're showing this, but I know the real life, what's going on with you. So why are you popping this out trying to show or mislead? Go be miserable or go be happy. Make that be a choice. But a lot of that is basically showboating and selling. Actually overselling. If you're at a function somewhere, and the same thing, there's another one, since you said that, and I find this to be, I ain't going to say as far as a pet peeve, but always just kind of make me wonder. If you go to a restaurant, why you got to take a picture of food, of a plate of food you getting ready to eat, to show who? I can't eat it. I can't enjoy it. Why I got to see it, knowing that you getting ready? What behooves your mind to think I want to see that BS? Go enjoy the food. That's it. I'm serious. There's many fine restaurants in this country that serve up great plates every day. But then again, you must show people, hey, I'm getting ready. Who cares, bro? Who cares, sis, at the end of the day? Who really cares? But that's where we are, man. That's where we are. It's all about that validation. Look at me. I call that the reality TV syndrome, bro. I just do because to me, when reality TV came along, it basically turned people that weren't necessarily actors or stars into stars. And a lot of us are trying to be something that we're not. So if you don't feel good about your life, you want people to see you as something that you're not anyway, There's no need. If you're not happy with your life, then it's time to make some changes, to do some things, improve some things, and find out why. But trust me, just showing someone you're at an event or showing someone your plate, talk about short-lived. Really? And half the folks that you're showing it to, I'm going to say 80%, don't care. Don't care. Yeah. They ain't going to come out and tell you, but they don't care. Something to think about, maybe, maybe not. But gratitude is another factor of happiness. I know we kind of touched on that some to an extent, but just being thankful, just absolutely being thankful and understanding what you're thankful for is a key factor. And as I said before, a lot of times we wait to things kind of happen, and we look at success as a level of happiness. And realistically, success and happiness are totally two different things. I'm going to say that again. We look at success as a way or feeling of happiness, but success and happiness are two totally different things. And I say that to say because we want success. We want to be successful. We want to have this. We want to make sure our life meant something. And then as we age sometimes, some goals we may have had, we may not have reached because some things weren't meant for us. So we start to kind of feel less successful. And then for, again, you're depleting that happiness bank because you're basing your happiness on success when it's not supposed to be based on that. If you find out what your true root of happiness is, with some gratitude, there goes your happiness consistently. Your happiness is not laid away. Your happiness is not built in what type of car you drive or you want to drive. It's not. When you can't afford it, that's not your happiness. That's not a road of success. It really isn't. You know, it's amazing how a lot of people look at people rolling around town. You got people driving around many countries, many cities in this state, this country, driving vehicles they can't afford. But they want you to believe they're successful. They can't afford paying $1,000, $1,200, $1,400 a month for a vehicle they literally can't afford, going to a one-bedroom shut hut. Just so when they come out, they can make you feel they're successful. It's ridiculous. That's not, there it is. That's not happiness. You have to understand that has nothing to do with it. Be grateful. The gratitude. That's it right there. Grateful. Humbleness in your gratitude to understand what has been given to you, what you have been experienced, what you had. Those are your roads to happiness. I want to put out a question to you, gentlemen, and it's no big deal, but I'm just curious to wonder, if I said to you, optimist or pessimist, where would you see yourself aligning with that, Mr. Charles?
That's a loaded question, but it's all good. and keeping it theme of the show, it's all good. You know what I'm saying? I have to be there where I need to be, but you know what I'm saying? You know, the white man got me down, but it's all good. But, I consider myself an optimist, primarily optimist, just because of the fact that experiences and things that have been detractors in life and the blessings of understanding where I am and where I've come from and knowing that, you know, like as was stated earlier, that you can dictate your own happiness. So I say optimist because of the fact that I now understand, you know, my skill set. I understand what I'm capable of, what my talents are, maybe, or my blessings are in life to help people as well, what I can do. So I understand that. So considering where I started and what I've overcome and achieved or whatever, even just feeling good about who I am as an individual, I'm more of an optimist because I'm like, well, damn, this could have been a lot worse. I know other people, I don't compare myself as much, have been through a lot of hell, and they didn't make it this far. So I got a damn good shot at kind of doing almost anything that I want to do if I put my mind to it. So definitely an optimist at this point.
Good stuff. Mr. DeMaurice, if you had to choose one optimist or pessimist, which one reflects you, sir?
I would say that I'm an optimist that daily fights against my pessimistic thoughts and sometimes outlook on things. Because I can catch myself being a pessimist, but it's a daily struggle.
It's a daily struggle to be optimistic. So I want to be optimistic, but sometimes I'm like, I had those pessimistic thoughts and those pessimistic views. I'm going to admit it. I do have those things because I've been on this show too many times, and people can rewind the tape and get my pessimistic views perspectives on things. But yeah, it's a daily fight that I strive to be optimistic and an optimistic person. But, those pessimistic thoughts do seep in sometimes, or I have those times where I have my bouts with that. And so it's a daily grind to try to keep that optimistic thought in pessimistic times and pessimistic situations.
That's good stuff, man. That's good stuff, really, because just because if you choose to be optimistic, it doesn't mean pessimistic ain't going to show up. It's going to come to the party at some times. It's going to find its way there, uninvited. And it's key that we notice it, move it out the way. I, again, would choose optimistic for the most part. I've had people say to me that I've known for several years, a period of time, that they have come to me wanting to talk about something, and I wouldn't even allow them to go in it. I'm like, no, we're going to, I don't, because, and I guess that's the optimistic side of me, to where I'm not going to bask in the negative and the what could happen and what's going to happen, and the doom factor. This been to the point where I don't even want to focus on that. I want to focus on this. Let's kind of focus on what good can come out of it. Because to me, good can come out of anything. It just can. And we kind of look at it in a different way, in a different light, and search for it. It may not be right up front. It may not be staring you in the eyes and that what you can see. But if you spend some time and push past what might seem as a bad situation, you may find some good in it. And those are the trials and tribulations of life. They're brought to us for a reason, in a sense, to where we should grow and learn from them. And the next time those challenges come along, we have an easier path. So, yeah, I think for me, yeah, I always choose and basically will live an optimist side. And just like anyone else, that's like you said, Mr. DeReese, not saying a pessimistic thought doesn't come. I think it's the way we're wired. I think the way we're designed, to where the mind is basically going to basically give you a pessimistic thing to choose from. But again, about choices, man, we got to choose basically to kind of go with the positive side. If that's what you want, if that's what you really want, and you want to keep that happiness bank full, yeah, you roll with the optimistic side and keep it rolling. Gentlemen, we're going to jump into the questions, but I want to say this too. Next show, I announced that last week we're going to do scars, emotional scars. I think I'm going to put that back a week or two. And I want to do something different next week for our show. I want to have you two gentlemen, basically, we open up and we come in, you two, for a good portion of next week's episode, you two dictate what we're going to talk about. We're going to open up the landscape and what you two want to bring upon the table. We're going to basically explore that, because I want to always know what you guys are thinking, what you guys are feeling. That's why we go to the questions. It's just, I don't want to basically be to where we take a topic all the time and focus on that. But I want to always make sure you two are good, where you need to be. And if it's something that, we can talk about among ourselves to help you, that's even better. So in a sense, next week, when the blue light sort of core light goes on and we start pushing the buttons and things start getting modulated and stuff of that nature, Mr. DeReese and Mr. Charles would take this When Black Men Talk and bring what we're talking about. If that's okay with you two, we'll close this section up. Well, thank those around the country, man, that are giving us a listen. I know from time to time I mention places, and sometimes it's so many to mention, and I may not mention them all, so I'm going to thank everyone, no matter where you're listening from, for giving us an air and allowing us to basically be with you for at least 60 minutes or so, and kind of running through. And I say you have to agree with us, but if you appreciate what we're doing, please share that with some other folks. Let people know that these three gentlemen get together and they talk. They happen to be black. We ain't afraid of that. We don't run from that. We put it right on the damn headline, When Black Men Talk. That's who we are, and we're going to be that until we die. Mr. Charles, your questions this week, sir.
Yeah, I was thinking about this. particularly with the I'm sure with the three of us and what we've experienced and what we've been able to accomplish, there are, I'm sure all of us have experienced people who have come to us for assistance or help or advice about some serious issues. And my question is, how often or do you often think about when you speak or when you really provide whatever, even some insight to what's going on in these people's lives, how careful are you when you start to respond, knowing that some of the answers that you give could be very influential in with these people's major problems in their lives?
Yes, that is the tricky part about it, because you want to make sure you help, or kind of, for me, give them something to think about as long as help, but you want to do it in a tactful manner, and I find that to be the way, you know, a tactful manner to where their mind will get there without you basically telling them this is what it is, and this is what, I never say you need to do X, Y, Z. I'm going to give you something to think about to where you can determine your own choice, because at the end of the day, you have to own your decisions. And I know I've said this before, man. I remember when, I don't know what it was, man. I don't know if they thought I opened up a shop, but when I became separated years ago, there's cats that was just coming to me out the woodwork, man, wanting advice that they get divorced and I get separated. And I'm like, who am I? I'm saying to myself, who am I to tell you in your situation what to do? I mean, we can, you know, talk back and forth, but that decision lies with you, because when I made that decision for myself, I didn't go around and check the room and talk to anyone and blah, 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 blah. But, you know, so my thing was hear them, make some suggestions. And in some cases, some of the cats, they shouldn't even been thinking about divorce, you know, but kind of basically in a tactful manner, you know, even if I felt they should, I'm going to say, yeah, man, you need to leave her, but I'm not going to be that way and be that forceful, because if I was to influence some of them like that for me, and once they did such and then regretted it, I would have felt bad. You know, I would feel bad. So my thing is, you know, yeah, it has to be done with some with some care, some consideration, some compassion, and some tactfulness. It has to be done that way. And that's what a lot of people don't do when people come to them. You know, they'd be talking about something. Oh, I mean, you just need to, you know, they fly off. And they use their own anger or stuff they may feel, and they infuse that into their response. And to me, that's why you got to be careful who you go to. Because if you want a cheerleader, go to anybody. You know, go to who you think is going to cheerlead and pat you on the back and support you. But if you want a real, honest, earnest response, be careful who you bring your situation to. Because everyone doesn't, it's not going to be or give you what you need in those times that you may need it. Mr. DeMaurice.
You know, I a few years ago decided I was not going to give anybody any more advice. And what I do is I'll give people suggestions, or I'll have them look at different perspectives on the situation. And I always say, you know, it's your choice on what you're going to do. You know, I can't make that choice for you. Here's what I see in what you're explaining. And so I think you're right. It gives the person some time to really kind of think about their own way of looking at things. Because a lot of people, what they do sometimes, they'll ask for advice. It's just to validate what they want to do anyway. And they just need somebody to kind of co-sign on it so they can feel better about it. But I don't want to take that responsibility for somebody's life. So I'll say to them, there's some suggestions, or here's something. I wouldn't even say here's what I would do, because you and I are two different people and two different feelings, and we may look at it two different ways. So I just kind of broaden the perspective, kind of help a person think things through, or think of all the different nuances of the situation before they make a decision. And so I can't make that decision for them, and I tell them that straight up. This is a tough situation. I can't make that decision for you. Here are some things to look at. Here are some pros and cons that may come from this particular situation. So I think definitely you got to be very careful when you do that, because I've seen situations where, you know, somebody goes to somebody for advice, it backfires, and then they blame it on the person that they went to get the help from, they went to talk to. If you wouldn't have said this, I wouldn't have been in this particular situation, or it would have been better. I wish I never talked to you. And, you know, you don't want to do that. So I put it in a way that they can't come back and say, oh, you told me to do this. No, this is your decision. I just broaden the perspective so that you can look at it from different sides, or what the other person may be thinking in the situation that you haven't really kind of taken in consideration. And so I get myself out of it, and I just try to be as supportive as possible, but I try to be as neutral as possible in the situation, because you can get drug into that. The other person might find out you were talking to that person, and it blows up into something that you don't want, or is just uncalled for. Yeah.
Yeah. You say something, they go back and say, well, you know, so-and-so said.
Yeah, yeah. Don said this.
Oh, man. Yeah, that could get funny and ugly real quick. Good question, Mr. Charles. Your response, sir?
Yeah, I think it's key. And when folks come to me in some very crucial situations, I said, I'll just tell you this first off the bat, that I think it's important to realize that you should be, if I was going to do this, if I was in your situation, I'd be gathering information. It's like gathering information, resources and whatnot, knowing that as you go through this information and you dissect it and understand it and looking at your situation, you still have to make the overall decisions to what you're going to do, right? This is nobody else's. This is yours. So you collect information. Some stuff is good for you. Sometimes it's not. You discard it. But after you look at all of the evidence in front of you, then you can make hopefully a better decision, a collective decision that you can live with. And that's the one thing I mentioned. And DeMaurice mentioned it earlier. I've always, first off, say, look, I'm a different type of dude, okay? I'm a different animal. I would have done it this way. But you can't do that because that's not who you are, okay? Straight out the box, I'm going to just tell you, that's not for you. So, well, you might think, well, you would do it this way. I would know, you know, your family, you raise your family a certain kind of way. You guys have a certain kind of way that you go about business. You handle things. You're used to certain things in your environment. Me, I'm a little bit more loose cannon because that's how I've lived, because I have not really had to answer to certain individuals in a family setting. I do what the hell I want to. And for real quick, and for those that said, well, such and such said, you said, did you say this? I'm like, yeah, I did, because you know how the hell you are. Anyway, but I got to be careful with that, because they be like, I said, you know, I don't give a damn. You won't speak to me till next Christmas. It's going to be fine. If you would have handled your business, both of y'all, and act like adults, you wouldn't be in the situation that you are in, coming to me for some damn advice. I do that once a year, but normally I'm a little bit more calmer and cooler with a better response. Sorry.
Man, you just gave me a topic for a show, bro. I'm going to make a note of it right here, acting like adults. Because to me, that is the key in a lot of situations, man, to where, and I think realistically, we need to check ourselves from time to time and ask ourselves, am I acting as an adult? Because to me, when you act as an adult, there aren't any situation that you can probably go wrong in. If you're acting as a mature, responsible adult, you know, I know I spoke earlier about separation of force, whatever. You know, it always amazes me. People think that when you get divorced, you got to be mad and cussing at the person and all that stuff. And it's like, you ain't, at one point, you loved this person. So the adult way in my mind is thinking, okay, maybe it doesn't work, whatever things have happened in the interim. All right, it is what it is. But why I got to hate you now? Why I got to come out and be mad or basically act to the point where you're not going to be whole if I'm not with you. So, yeah, man, acting in any situation, yeah, acting like checking ourselves to see if we're acting like an adult, I think can bring some good moderation, at least from one side, because you can't control what the other side is doing. But in an argument or anything, if you can pull yourself back and just go into the mindset, am I truly acting like an adult? And And that's not based on what they do. They may change, but that's the approach we all should be striving for. Your question, Mr. DeMaurice.
It's kind of a question, but it's a salute, actually. And remind me to do this on a sports show under the title Mama Was Right. There's a soccer player, a footballer over in Europe. I think he's from Morocco. I'm not going to, butcher his name up, but folks will know the story because it's a popular story. And I guess he got married to this woman. I think she's about 10, 12 years older. And I think she's a Spanish actress, a model, something like that. And this dude, he was married to her, and then he got divorced. She filed for divorce, thinking that she's going to get half his stuff. Now, this dude makes about a million euros a month, and he's a pretty good soccer player. But this is how smart he was, or how smart his family was. So when she took him to court, she found out that he doesn't own anything. And he doesn't own any property, cars, any stocks and bonds and everything. That 80% of his salary is under his mother's name. So he doesn't have any name on his clothes, nothing. And when he wants something, he goes to his mom. His mom makes the arrangements to get what he wants. And so so when he got to court, I guess she thought she was going to get half of the million euros a month, and then, she'd be fine. But it backfired on her. I think what I read recently is that since he has nothing for her to get half of, she has to pay court costs and all that other stuff. She has to settle all that up because she brought it, she filed it, and all this other stuff because it found out he had nothing. I mean, he had nothing that was under his name. And so I'm going to list that and see, get your responses on the topic, Mama Was Right. Because Mama has something to do with, like, listen, I don't trust this broad, put everything in my name. So when it goes down, you keep all your, I got your stuff.
Mama no other woman now. They ain't no other woman. So that's great, man. I mean, realistically, I say it's great in the sense where, he protected himself in a sense to where if it came to that, hey, it worked itself out. It reminded me of like Marshawn Lynch, man. I think Marshawn Lynch, I forgot how many years he might have played in the NFL, but Marshawn Lynch lived with his mother. If you think about that for a second, didn't spend a dime. Didn't spend basically the money he made from NFL, and to this day, Marshawn Lynch ain't married. Now, I don't know if that's his mama saying not get married, whatever, but think about that, man. So, Norman, that's some classic stuff right there. For the most part, realistically, are you getting married for riches or are you getting married for love? And that might have been the case there, married for riches on her part. And maybe mama saw that early on, saw the type of woman that she is, what she possessed, her potential, where she might have been headed, and said to her son, her child, I think you need to handle this way. If it plays itself out, yeah. So, kudos to mama. Mr. Charles.
Yeah, no, I think that I can see that, particularly when you're younger, right, and you have all that kind of money. I think a couple individuals I remember from back in the day, they received a lot of money from playing like in the NBA, and I think what their parents did for them, they kind of created like it's like a foundation or trust where the young person was receiving more or less like an allowance, right? They could do anything they wanted to, but when they wanted to make a purchase or they wanted to make a major decision, people like getting married and doing some things, they had to come and say, hey, this is all yours. We don't own anything. And this is, of course, I think through his parents. We don't own anything. This is all yours. But every time you make a decision, instead of just going out blowing money, there's some exceptions, you come to us and we just kind of talk about it and make sure that's what you want to do. And I think that's spot on what the mother did as well. Because sometimes people, you can talk to people or even with females that, and you're like, oh, I think we're having a great time. We went to Morocco. We should get married. And we should do this, that, and that. And then by the time you come back, you're on cloud nine. And then all of a sudden, I want to do this. And you come back to your trust, and they go, you really want to think about that? Think about this, think about that. And then if they say, yeah, I still want to move forward, great. But at least they took the time to think about it. And that's what Mama did. Mama protected me from, I guess, the so-called gold digger. That's the other thing, too, is if I earn this money, it should be a prenup anyway. Hell, you didn't earn none of this money. Keep it in 100. Do you love me or you love my money?
Yeah, we, it's out there, man. Not saying it's always women against men against women, too. But, damn, it's you know, I remember years ago, I think this was kind of the first time, let me come back to you real quick, Mr. Demetrius, but I think it was the first time that really kind of, for most men, I can say for myself, and I believe for most men, that woke up to the idea about, you know, you can go out there and really establish some stuff, and then, you know, if you're not careful at that time of departing, you can get raked through the coals. And the name Johnny Carson, we all remember years ago, I think, I forgot how much he was worth, but Johnny Carson at the time was in his 70s and half. I mean, that led to Eddie Murphy talking about it and everything, half. And I don't remember her sitting, I'm not saying she wasn't a good wife or none of that nature, but when you think about, I don't know how long he was married, but I mean, Johnny Carson was on television for a long time, 5 nights a week. I ain't never see up. Your response to what went on, homeboy and homegirl, Mr. DeRice.
Man, this is gonna set a trend. I told a buddy of mine. I said, if I ever get married again, it's a trick to it. But if I do, this is gonna be the route I'm taking. I ain't saying nothing. I'm putting everything in somebody else's name. So when it goes down. He has set a whole nother pattern of how you do this. Okay, no, you ain't got to do a prenup, baby, but I ain't got nothing. She ain't going to know that. I'm going, you know, when I need to go get something, you know, have it sitting there with somebody else saying, hey, you know, we got this, the game plan is set. And so and he set a whole nother trend. Y'all better heed this. If there was a man of the year, I'm saluting right now. This guy is the man of the year right now. I got to give it to him. This was the best power move that I've seen in a long time, and it's good to see us win just once in this scam we call dating and marriage.
Wow! I've heard marriage routine. You're like, You don't add marriage. I mean, not marriage. Date me scam. You don't add marriage scam to a problem.
Oh yeah, big time scam. Big time scam.
Somebody got a man in this girl. You
scam. It's a trap. It's a trick.
Oh man. Well, you know, let's say that with the time that we have, because how does do we actually view marriage as not being full and wholesome, Mr. Charles?
Wow. Kinda, yeah. Because there was a different time back in the day. There was a different time people were dedicated to it. They wanted to move forward, and it was all about love and coming together and making this wholesome family and living life to the fullest. But with all of the prenups and intangibles and money and social media, independent women and men not being as strong as they should have been like they was back in the day. There's a lot of things, man, a lot of tricks going on. So you got to understand that while you want to be wholesome and all in love, finances do play a part, gentlemen. Just keep it at 100. You can't live off love anyway. Unless you're living in the shack and y'all both don't mind the shack, just keeping it 100 with you. So, yes, it's very difficult to look at that love and living the life that we thought marriage was going to be wonderfully anymore, because we are all damn skeptics. Even though you may be romantic, you'd be like, well, damn, I better check and make sure what his credit score is. If he want to go to work, do he do this, do he do that? We're all skeptics. So get your ass in order, because somebody's skeptical.
Yeah, I think that's the key word there, Mr. Charles. I think marriage has, for a lot of men, become skeptical. It just has, for different reasons, it's become skeptical. You know, it really has. It's just, and I know people can hear that and go, well, you just don't know. It's and a lot of the reasons are justifiable. They are. And it's not based on what other people may have done. It's just what you feel. It's grown to be such because we watched it, how marriages basically turn into, you know, sometimes a sideshow, an actual sideshow. You know, people are married sometimes because they want to say they're married. People are married because they want to gain this, is that. And it's like the foundation of what marriage is really created for has been forgotten, totally forgotten. I can almost hear your words coming out, Mr. Dean Reese. Marriage is men we look at as being full and wholesome, bro.
Not anymore. But see how my pessimistic side comes out. See, it's just the daily struggle, people. It's a daily struggle. But no, I think
pessimistic,
I think
hell,
more men
all
are.
Facts.
I think for men now, I think they're actually seeing it because there's too many examples not to see what's really going on. And like, we've had this conversation, I think last year sometime. And I remember saying that, and you said, man, we're going to talk about that on the show, that man, it's been something that's been kind of sold into our society is how we act as males are supposed to act. And what benefits do we get out of this particular kind of society norm of, you know, courting and dating and all this other stuff. It's like we're really not getting any benefits out of it because usually we're getting hit over the head when it all goes wrong. And sometimes we're coming into it with being sincere, things of that sort. And people make mistakes along the way. I acknowledge that. But it's just not I think men are waking up to the idea that this is just not a fair situation for me, and this is not to my advantage, and I'm just going to get the what my friend calls the F sandwich in the whole situation. So until things change, or until you find that person that is not that you can really trust, that won't really take advantage of how things are set up. Men are kind of standing back and saying, you know, why would I do this? Why would I put myself through this? Seeing what old boy went through, seeing what, you know, my buddy went through, my uncle, my dad, all this other stuff. All the evidence is around you that this is not an ideal situation to be in if you're going to lose everything. And then everything you work for goes to somebody else that, you know, could at any day just flip the switch and go, oh, I want a divorce, or I don't want this. Or, and by the way, I deserve, or I'm entitled to half your stuff. It's just not fair. It's just not fair. So as a man, you go, okay, there's no incentive for me to do this. So, you know, why should I?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to it, man. And you're right. You hit that nail on a few things there because there's quite a bit there to where it's like a buffer, even if your heart, it's there. It's a buffer to some things that, and you have to work through those buffers if that's what you want, because it's definitely a buffer. Gentlemen, we kind of, you know, we got like 90 minutes or so, 90 seconds or so. I want to kind of just go real quick with this. 30 seconds for Mr. Charles, man. Did the world learn about Fox yesterday and the Sacramento basketball team, bro?
No doubt. I'm going to say it. I've been saying this. I told y'all to watch out when Mike Brown took over. It is the island of misfit toys. I told y'all, a lot of dudes that never had success in different places now are enjoying themselves. Anybody on this call, anybody listening to my voice, if you can tell me that you thought Malik Monk was going to be a baller back in the day, I said you a bold-faced lie. I'm going to leave it right there. Island of misfit toys.
Mr. D. Maurice, man, Fox and the gang, what about them?
Yeah, I've been looking at that brother for a long time. I wish the Knicks would have picked him up at the draft, but they didn't. But anyway, they should. He should be a household name. That team should be a household name. And, you know, this was the concern we had going into the playoffs, that Golden State couldn't win on the road. And they fought, but Sacramento didn't back down. It was a great game.
I say the same thing, man. I mean, Golden State, basically, my goodness, man, they ain't die easy, but stop promoting LeBron. This is what you should be promoting. Promote some young cats like this. Get off LeBron jockstrap. Big game today. Ain't no big damn game. It ain't going nowhere. Anyway, we get together midweek and we do the Goon Squad Sports and we talk about what's going down. Thank you, too, for doing what you always do. It's When Black Men Talk. Mr. Charles, Mr. DeMaurice. We'll be back together next week, and guess what? They're going to take it over. Y'all stay safe, stay black, and we'll talk soon.